Weight loss solutions are not one-size-fits-all. Hers makes it simpler to get started and stick with a weight loss plan backed by expert-guided online care that puts your weight loss goals first. These include oral medication kits or compounded GLP-1 injections. Through Hers, pricing for oral medication kits started just $69 a month for a 10-month plan when paid in full upfront. No hidden fees, no membership fees. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hers brings expert care straight to you with 100% online access to personalized treatment plans that put your goals first. Reach your weight loss goals with help through Hers. Get started at forhers.com/foryou to access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss plans. That's forhers.com/foryou, forhers.com/foryou. Paid for by Hims and Hers Health. Weight loss by Hers is not available everywhere. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Restrictions at forhers.com. Apply. Trying to lose weight? It's time to try Hers. At forhers.com/foryou, you can access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss treatments tailored just for you. These include oral medication kits or compounded GLP-1 injections. Through Hers, pricing for oral medication kits started just $69 a month for a 10-month plan when paid in full upfront. No hidden fees, no membership fees. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hers brings expert care straight to you with 100% online access to personalized treatment plans that put your goals first. Reach your weight loss goals with help through Hers. Get started at forhers.com/foryou to access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss plans. That's forhers.com/foryou, forhers.com/foryou. Paid for by Hims and Hers Health. Weight loss by Hers is not available everywhere. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Restrictions at forhers.com. Apply.
This is the first time that that's coming out, actually. I didn't realize how much it would affect the rest of my life, not speaking about it, never telling anyone.
Welcome to another real, raw, and authentic episode of Sober.Buzz, spreading the good buzz, hosted by me, Josh Case, and my beautiful fiance, Heidi Case.
That's me.
I'm a lucky man. Our global community crosses cultures and has no international borders, as addiction and recovery is a human journey. Hope is found here.
Yes, it is.
So today, since Heidi has interviewed me, yes. I'm going to interview her about her life.
Yikes.
And I'm going to...
Should I be scared?
I'm going to expose you. Oh, let's do an expose. No, I don't think you have to be...
Okay.
Yeah, because I want to wake up in the morning.
Yeah.
All my fat
Steve's. Yeah.
So
yeah.
I'll be nice.
That's a good idea.
So why don't we start with, why don't you tell us where you were born and, a little bit about your early life. And it's not typical.
No. So I was actually born in Utah at Salt Lake University of Utah Hospital. I was adopted. And so, funny thing, my parents were actually in Asia at the time and in the middle of a hurricane, and no one could get a hold of them to tell them that I was available. So my grandpa and my aunt Heidi, who was living with him at the time, went to the hospital and picked me up. And
they picked you out too. They had a choice between a boy and a girl, right?
Yes. So on the phone call, there was a choice between a boy and a girl. And my grandpa had not had a grandson yet. And so he kind of looked at my Aunt Heidi like, oh, maybe we should get a boy. And my Aunt Heidi was like, absolutely not. We're getting her. Because I think the boy was available a little bit after me, if I'm correct. I don't really totally
remember. They made the right choice.
Yeah, they made the right choice, and Grandpa left the hospital with a beautiful baby girl. So I actually was with them for about 14 days or something until my parents were able to get back to the States and come pick me up and take me back to Japan, where they lived at the time, where my dad was a banker helping set up, I guess, Bank of America in Asia. So I stayed there for a year. And then moved to San Francisco and continued to live there until I was about 10 years old when I moved to Utah. When I moved, I had a little, I guess I went through some interesting things that happened in Piedmont. I was molested by a childhood friend for quite some years. This is the first time that that's coming out, actually. I didn't realize how much it would affect the rest of my life, not speaking about it, never telling anyone. So that was an interesting time for me. I did move to Utah about the middle of my third grade year and had a rough go. I was not happy about leaving California. My neighbor was my nanny as I was growing up, and he became like my brother. And
I actually got to meet him.
You did.
Went to go get pizza.
That's right. You got to meet him. We went to visit San Francisco. Like, what? Not
a year and a half ago.
Yeah, year and a half ago. So, yeah, that was really fun for me to be able to introduce you to him. He is just like a brother to me. So it's nice to always keep in contact with him. But
he still lives there, too, right?
He does. He still lives in the same house.
Right next door to your old house.
Yes, right next door to my old house. So Josh got to see my old house. That was really fun. It was really, really hard for me to leave him. We were really, really close. And that whole experience was really kind of traumatizing for me as a kid. I know that may sound a little weird, but like, yeah, I just moved. But like, I loved it there. So that was really hard for me. Got here Texas. Now got to Utah in the middle of third grade and went through a lot of bullying, a lot of teasing. I've always been really tall. And at the time, my favorite outfit was a pair of green sweats. And so the kids like to call me the Jolly Green Giant, which really stuck with me. I did not appreciate that very much. I ended up changing to a private school about fifth grade and stayed there until I graduated from high school.
Did you, when you moved to Utah, I don't think I've ever asked you this, the same house your parents are in now?
Yes.
Oh, so you, okay.
Yeah, that's always been the house. So I lived sort of very, very close to downtown Salt Lake for most of my life, probably about 30 years. I did have some times that I moved away for short periods of time. I went to a year of college in San Francisco, where I had smoked weed before in high school after a very traumatic event happened. I was raped and pretty much lost all interest in everything. I was good at art. I was good at singing. I did swim. I could have gone much further in swimming than I did, but I really just felt like I wasn't me anymore. So I started smoking pot. I fell in with a horrible boyfriend and sort of his crowd, who was not a part of my school because like no one at my school used drugs. Like this is just like unheard of, right? So, I mean, a few, but you knew who they were and it wasn't great. And if the school knew, you were kicked out. So I was lucky I didn't get kicked out. I was on quite a few sports teams, lacrosse. I did soccer for a while. I did volleyball, obviously swimming, tried basketball out when I was a little younger than that. But pretty much everything but volleyball stopped until I graduated from high school. Then I went to San Francisco for my freshman year of college, where my drug exploration really took off. I was doing ecstasy. I was doing mushrooms. I started smoking cigarettes. Which is weird, but I just randomly started smoking cigarettes.
I smoked plenty of mine when I smoked.
Yeah, I did. I can see that. And it was kind of like the drinking thing, like it became like a social thing. So but I started drinking every day in college. I wrote most of my papers while either high or really drunk. I went to my classes high or drunk, and somehow I managed to get a 4.0. So it wasn't until I oddly sobered up for a while and moved back to Utah that I ended up failing out of college 2 years later.
Why did you not go back to San Francisco?
Yeah, I thought I was going to marry the stupid boyfriend that I fell in the wrong crowd with. And thought I would go back and see how that worked. And I was a stupid teenager and it did not work at all. And I did not get married, luckily, because that would have been an absolute nightmare. And so I ended up sort of switching schools around. Although a year after getting back, I got back into drugs again just for a very short amount of time. I ended up trying meth for the first time, really kind of fell in love with that. Although you would think that it would make your mind race for somehow, for me, it helped me focus more and I got a lot done. But again, I mean, I did horribly in school, so that didn't really work out very well for me.
What happened that you did so well and just didn't study anymore?
You know, I ended up getting really, really bad depression. I couldn't pull myself out of it. I just really, this is when, like, probably the first time that my depression really, really, like, started showing up, like, in my life.
Were you, like, about 19?
Yeah, about 19-ish. Yeah, it was really sad. I ended up staying with a friend of mine at their house for quite a bit of the summer and cleaned up while I was there. She knew that I had been on drugs. Her parents didn't, but her parents were really nice. And they had this ginormous house up in the mountains and just let me stay there pretty much all summer. And we were good friends. So that was fun. And then I decided actually what got me away from doing the meth was I realized like if I kept doing this, like this is going to be really bad. Like, I hadn't gotten to the point where I looked like a total tweaker or anything, but I knew in my mind, like, this could go really badly. And so I turned to my dad one day and I said, "Dad, I need to get out of here." And he had been talking about my doing an internship for Mitt Romney, who was running for governor at the time in Boston, Massachusetts. And so the next day, I literally moved to Boston and started this internship with Mitt Romney.
And you showed me where you lived.
I did.
Boston, yeah.
Yes, we went to Boston.
It's and funny. I've seen everywhere you've been.
Yeah.
I've lived in your life. Yeah,
you have. Except for my dorm in San Francisco. Yeah.
We lived in the same dorms in the University of Utah.
We did.
Yeah, that, different times.
Different times. Yeah. He's older than I am. So.
Yeah.
Much. No, just kidding. He's not. Just 7 years. So I ended up getting away from the whole drug scene and basically that friend group and leaving all of them behind finally, which was a really good thing because I was not going anywhere with them. So that happened. And then I decided to come home after the summer internship. I could have stayed a little longer. I thought about going to BU and decided to go back to Utah State where my best friend was and go to school there.
Logan, Boston. Logan, Boston.
Yeah, okay. I know. I really should have probably said Boston.
Okay.
But I ended up in the little town of Logan, Utah, up in the mountains. And
it's lovely.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, is it? Oh,
actually.
Oh, and Bear Lake. So yeah, it's not that bad.
I never went up to Bear Lake during that time. But oh. Yeah. So I went there. I met my ex-husband. It's a whole other story. And yeah, I stayed clean for several years. He ended up getting married within the next year. So by 2003, in the fall, I was married. 2004, August, I had a baby. And he had left on deployment to Iraq. Wait, actually, I was left to have a baby by myself and raise this kid until she was about 15 months old.
And if they're curious what this baby looks like now, there's a video on YouTube of Heidi seeing him for the first time in like 18 months.
That's right.
Big hug in California.
Except so, you can't really see her on there, but she is She is on the slideshow you made me.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so, yeah, that was true.
He thought that she was me.
Yeah, yeah, I did.
But she's in a boating picture on this slideshow for
her birthday. She has your daughters. I know.
Yeah, but she has darker hair. Anyway, so she's very beautiful. Love her to death. Yes, and she was like, I called her like my little monkey because she just was constantly attached to me. And it was so fun. I took her everywhere. I had two cousins who I'm really close with that were with me all the time during that time. And some good friends that were with me during that time that were really supporting me. And that's really the only way I made it through that stressful experience.
You told me you had a bit of fun, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, I had a lot of fun because of them. Yeah, it was actually probably like one of the funnest summers of my life, honestly. And probably one of the funnest years of my adult life.
What, rehab was like the funnest last year?
You know, it's up there, but no.
No, you worked at OC Tanner too, right?
I did. I worked at OC Tanner for a little while, for about 6 months maybe, while I was while he was gone. And
what were your favorite pieces of jewelry
then? I'm wearing it actually, yes. My David earring. Yes. So I stayed clean for quite some time. Basically during like my children growing up most of the time. So I never was on drugs while pregnant or trying for children or anything like that. I have four children. They're 3 years apart, except for the last two are twins. So I had four children under six at one point. And that was something. That was a handful. And pretty much I went a little crazy. And by a little, I mean a lot. My depression really, really kicked in at this time. Anxiety really kicked in. This is where my misdiagnosis happened after my second child was born. This is where the ECT...
Well, maybe tell, in case people haven't seen the earlier episodes, why don't you briefly talk about...
Everything from clothing to household items are getting more expensive each day. The world of fast fashion has complicated clothing production by outsourcing around the world to whoever can sew them the cheapest. And now you, the consumer, are paying the price with rising costs. American Giant is about keeping things simple and close to home. They aren't affected by tariffs because their products never leave the U.S. So when you buy from American Giant, you're taking a stand for hardworking people, local communities, and quality clothes. American Giant directly supports American manufacturers and ensures you aren't footing that tariff bill. Support American-made, tariff-free clothing with American Giant with American Giant. Get 20% off your first order when you use promo code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off when you use code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com.
What you were misdiagnosed for?
So I was misdiagnosed for bipolar after my second child, my son, was born. Spent the rest of my adult life sort of dealing with that as a misdiagnosis. Because
I'm about 25, 26 years old?
Yeah. On until... just this last year when I was in rehab about 13 months ago. So, well, actually it was like toward the end of rehab. So it was more like about a year ago. Yeah. 11, 12 months ago. So, there was a lot of crap that went down because of that. I did end up abusing my prescriptions after my twins were born. I really couldn't cope at that point anymore.
You had a lot of things happening.
I had a lot of things going on.
Neck surgery twice.
Yeah, I had neck surgery twice. I was living with like the chronic pain of that.
Bladder?
My gallbladder was out.
My kids call it gallbladder, so I sometimes mispronounce it.
So all in like 1 year, or it's like 3 years actually, I had like two neck surgeries. My gallbladder was out.
You had your hysterectomy?
I had an ablation, then I had a hysterectomy. So I was like in and out of surgeries, which also really kickstarted my addiction to opioids. Love them. That's just...
A lot of people do.
Yeah, they just made me feel real good. And numbed the pain of my emotions and the physical pain. And I also... really got into drinking wine or just flat out drinking, period, with my morphine with my Lortabs, with my Somas, with anything that I could get my hands on. I was drinking with it to magnify the effects of it.
During this time, you ended up going to a place called Sierra Tucson.
I did.
And there was you also had some, neighborhood issues. And so it was a very complicated time with surgeries and everything.
Right. Very, very complicated time. When I went to Sierra Tucson, I really thought I was only going to treat my mental health. It is a rehab facility, but they were known for also treating some coexisting disorders that I had been diagnosed with, and so was looking for hope there, and really found it in starting some EMDR while I was there, and like a lot of like pain therapies. Like I did a lot of acupuncture, did a lot of massage, you know, a lot of meditation, sort of a more holistic approach on doing things. I wasn't able to take my pain meds there, obviously.
So it was really good for you. And you felt like you were like on the right path.
Right.
And then
I did.
But you really didn't have the, I guess, support.
Right.
Right?
So I came back and there really wasn't a lot of what I needed in Utah at the time. There is now, but not at the time when I came back. I couldn't find the EMDR that I was looking for. And I think I did find like one place, but my insurance wouldn't cover it. And it was really expensive and I couldn't afford it. And yeah, it really became a mess, compounded with marital issues and just trying to survive motherhood. I really started spiraling downhill after that. I ended up getting my medical marijuana card, continued drinking, not every day like I did in college or anything, but like drinking wasn't like my main like addiction. Like you were more of a drinker. I could have gone without it. I just liked the drugs mainly. And if the alcohol could magnify the drugs, then sure, bring it on. So yeah, there were a lot of things just really magnifying my mental health. I was in and out of the hospital, the psychiatric hospital there, the Huntsman Mental Health Institute, it's called now. I'm so used to calling it the neuropsychiatric unit.
And you went there a few times a year, and you actually find, you know, like a vacation almost. Like not a vacation, but like...
But a reprieve.
A reprieve, a break from life, if you will.
Yeah. I mean, it was always... You know, it always started with the fact that I wanted to kill myself and ended up there, but it would become kind of a reprieve. The problem being that I got all those ECT treatments.
Which if you were misdiagnosed, you probably wouldn't have had 52, right? I would imagine.
Yeah. I mean, the first time it was really to get me out of more of like a catatonic kind of depression, which was really serious. I really could not function anymore. I was not taking care of myself. I was just...
Well, that then did you get misdiagnosed after the first suicide attempt? Was it the same stay at the hospital?
That was the same stay.
Okay, so yeah. You know, maybe you want to talk about that again in case people haven't seen the earlier episode?
No, you can go check out the earlier episode.
There you go. There you go. Perfect. You're a salesperson.
Yeah, there you go. Go check out the earlier episode where I talk about my misdiagnosis. There is a lot in there and it would take a long time for me to go over that. So did go through a lot of those ECT treatments. They really affected my short-term memory.
And you do go into very much detail of how they're done.
It's pretty dramatic.
It doesn't sound...
It's almost archaic, quite honestly, except for they put you to sleep now. So, but yeah, really struggled with that. Yeah, my addiction, I was never, you know, it's weird. I was never really aware that I was an addict. That's how unself-aware I was at the time. Like I never even put the two together. It was just me taking care of my pain. And to me, that wasn't addiction. That was just the only way I knew how to take care of myself, right? And if it happened to make the emotional pain stop, then great, you know? So, you know, would really overdo it on the Klonopin and stuff like that. And, you know, I wasn't the type that would go like seek out the opiates or anything. So I didn't always have those available unless I had like really tweaked my back and ended up in the hospital again. I have a degenerative disc disorder. My back falling apart is a regular thing for me actually right now. I've been suffering for like the last 10 days. And it has not been fun. I spent a lot of time in the swimming pool and in the bathtub trying to get my spine to relax and elongate. It's not working. So it's sort of torture.
You mentioned that, yeah, your physical pain, and then you mentioned the emotional.
Yeah.
You talk about some of the things you had to have had to work through, and you know, a lot of it you didn't work through until, you know, rehab last year, right? You had a lot of suppressed.
I had quite a few things that I had not dealt with: the molestation as a child, the rapes as a teenager. I actually ended up being sexually assaulted in a hospital not long before I met you. During stay there, reported it to the staff and they ignored it. And then I was raped on a Tinder date. It was just a really violent, horrible experience. So that was really difficult. I did not deal with any of that until, I mean, I had tried. It's not like I didn't go to therapy. I went to therapy for years and I talked about, you know, some of that stuff, but the modality of therapy, I think, just didn't help me. It was only talk therapy. I really needed something like the EMD, internal family systems, which when I went back to rehab this past year, I was able to do literally like every other day. And so I even ended up asking for two therapists so that I can have these specific types of therapy. And I did a very intensive form of it during that stay. Honest to God, without that stay in rehab and without that time there doing those specific modalities, I could say I doubt that I would have ever really gotten over those things. And I don't know that you ever really get over them, right? But I'm able to live with it now. And when it comes up in my mind, I don't dwell on it. I worked on a lot of different issues while I was there and have been able to cope much better. According to my therapist now, I no longer qualify as being borderline personality disorder. Yes, there is no actual cure for, but I have gone into a remission to the point that I literally don't qualify for it anymore.
And I learned a lot more about it. And actually, I think possibly I had that at some point in time. But like what I know now about it, like I can see that was in you when we first met and for rehab. And I definitely see the vast difference. Like, right. You know, there's like 9 things. And if you have 5 or 6, you qualify. Like, if you have any, it's very minor. It's like not even, it doesn't even register, basically.
Right.
It's quite dramatic. So.
Yeah, a very, very dramatic change. Since rehab and all that therapy, and then the therapy that I've gone through after rehab, which I have to say has been very important to be able to continue that therapy. And I can't wait for my therapist to get back in town. She's been out of the country for the last couple of weeks. Got a lot to discuss with her. Yeah, so that's kind of me in a nutshell. Yeah.
I guess, what are the types of things you like doing? What makes you happy?
What makes me happy?
Well, I mean, that's obvious, right? but besides me.
Besides you.
I know you, like, well, you tell me a lot about traveling as a kid.
Yes, I love to travel. I started as a child. My family did some really amazing trips going to Africa, Japan, France, the island off of France, Corsica, you know, Tahiti, stuff like that. So like, I really loved to travel, and I really didn't get a chance to do that during my first marriage. I'm out of that now, obviously. getting married to this one pretty soon. We do a lot of traveling. That's something we both really enjoy doing and that I love being able to share with you. That's probably one of my biggest passions, is to be able to travel, because I'm a firm believer that traveling is like the biggest part of your education. I mean, you can go to school and university and all that all day long, but you really become open to and tolerant of other people through travel and experiencing their culture and their people and their food and everything about it, you know.
Realizing it's not,
you're not the only
the center of the universe.
Yeah, well, we're definitely not the
center. The U.S. isn't everything.
The U.S. is not everything, and especially not right now. That's just my opinion.
I just really realized recently how important travel is when you started, you know, looking back on
right.
your life. And you know, I even asked you, like, it seems like all your traveling stories are your childhood.
Right.
And you know, I didn't realize you didn't do much between your childhood and meeting me.
Right.
So it makes sense, you know. But,
yeah.
But yeah. We've gone to Turkey. We've gone to Italy. We've gone to, well, I went to Italy and then you met me there. That's a long story. We'll get to, maybe we'll talk about that
story in full one
yeah.
day.
Yeah.
It's a story.
I mean, she started it, but anyways.
I don't know about that.
but that actually started on one of our trips to New York. But anyway, we've traveled a lot. I love to travel. And actually, traveling sober is a lot more fulfilling because I actually
remember it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. I wish we'd been a little more sober in Italy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would like to go back now that we are sober. Re-experience that very fun. Maybe for our honeymoon.
So you mentioned you have four kids. You want to talk about how old they are?
Yes, yeah. I have four children. I have a daughter who's about to turn 21 here in 10 days.
And I am older than you. I admit it. A younger woman, but I don't have a married kid.
No, you don't.
I don't.
No, you don't.
I don't.
So
I don't have a married kid.
Yeah.
How does that feel?
I feel old. Thanks, Alyssa.
what did she say to justify getting married so young? What was that? It was cute. You had a funny response.
She said, "Well, you and Dad got married really young. You know, you set the precedent." And I said, "Not a really great precedent considering you were divorced." But that was kind of funny. But she's happy, and I'm happy for her. She eloped in December of last year, and she is very happy, and her husband is deployed right now. She also married a military, and he will hopefully be back in the next
9 months,
maybe
6 months or 9 months.
It was like 7 months. I'm not sure. We'll have to talk to Alyssa on that one, but he's over in Japan right now, so we wish him well. Bye, Talon. And then I have
I guess we're going to follow in her footsteps. We're going to
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. So now everybody. I'm following in your footsteps. Yeah. So there you go.
There we go. Even.
Yeah, we're even. And then I have my son, Skylar, and what's today? It's August. So he will be 18 in September. And then I have my twins, Ashton and Haven, and they are 15 as of the beginning of July. So, yeah, I have my four kiddos.
And their grandkid, who knows?
Alyssa, don't do that to me yet. No, I would love it to have grandkids. Even if your kids have grandkids. And I have obviously three lovely stepchildren, Madeline and Mikey and Maya, who I love very much. So
they adore you and all their friends do too. They love following you on Instagram.
I don't know about that.
They are very popular.
They are very great. So I do love them very much.
So you love eating out.
I love eating out. I'm terrible. I hate cooking. I love eating out.
Yeah, but I've heard about all the things you cook. Story for another day.
Another lifetime.
But you don't like, she refuses to sit and admit she likes fusion, but she does like fusion.
I really don't.
But the last two places we ate, fusion.
Okay, but I didn't really have very fusion-y things.
There was an apple in your sushi.
But it was good. So
it was
good. That one was good. But for the most part, I don't like fusion.
So what is your favorite food? If you had a last meal, what would it be?
That's really hard. I can't do that.
And that's what she said, but you need to pick. You set me up for that one.
Thank you. Yeah, I did.
You need to pick something. Your last meal. You can have like three courses. You can pick three things. You have a little bit of each.
I can pick three courses. Could they be like different cuisine?
Sure. Top three things.
Like a steak, really good steak.
Yeah, the steak.
Like very nice, medium rare, more on the rare side.
A Capital Grill steak.
Capital Grill
steak with the little onion rolls and the pumpernickel.
Oh my gosh, yes.
Okay.
Number two.
It has to be medium rare. It has to be. So if you had
I'm one of those people. I will literally send it back if you give me something more than medium rare. Yeah, like I'm kind of.
And you've been cooking steak really well lately.
So
number two,
sushi.
Yeah.
But I don't like the like super raw
stuff. She doesn't like the real sushi. She likes the deep fried sushi with the cream like cheese. All the tempura,
stuff like that.
You know, yeah.
Pretty much anything Japanese I really love unless it's raw and wriggly.
I'm gonna guess the next thing is gonna be the big Texan, but you already said steak.
Yeah.
But you drink that barbecue sauce.
I would drink that barbecue sauce. That could be on my steak.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So what's the third thing?
So the third thing, probably Indian food.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or Thai food.
Thai food.
Yeah. It's a toss up between really good curry and pad thai, shrimp pad thai.
So. I'll let you have both for your last meal.
Okay, thanks. Thank you.
And then I got one other question.
Okay, what?
If you could meet anybody in history, who would you want to meet and talk to? Have dinner with, have your last meal with? Who would it be? And you can't pick like me or something like that. Just somebody like who in history? Author, writer?
I actually really hate this question because I have no clue.
Can't even think of one?
Probably Leonardo da Vinci.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah. I love his work. It's pretty incredible. That or Michelangelo.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because those sculptures are something else.
They're amazing.
Yeah. After seeing them in Italy, it blows my mind.
Yeah. You got over flying coach to Italy pretty quick. So it was amazing. Seeing her in Rome, just taking it all in was pretty, it was pretty neat for me.
Yeah.
I mean, I've seen stuff like that, but like seeing it was cool.
Yeah.
That was my favorite part of the trip. Like, remember when we danced by the ruins and they were playing the music? That was fun.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And then you got sick and I took care of you.
Yes.
On my train.
Yes. I got very sick.
Yeah. Well, Heidi, thanks for letting me interview you.
Always.
So I don't know if I really interviewed you.
I kind of just rambled, didn't I?
You kind of took over and didn't rein you in, but you were told a good story. So if anybody has any questions after hearing this, I'm sure Heidi
would love to
entertain them.
Always open to questions.
Shoot an email or a DM or something like that.
Or subscribe. That is where I will answer all of the AMEs.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So
you're going to have to subscribe.
Go subscribe. Listen to the lady. I do what she says all the time. So we thank everyone for joining us today. Everyone stay safe and sober out there in the wild. And we'll see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.